So I'm going to tell you about a paper that we just put on the archive with my student Vivien Londe and Gilles Zemmour in France. And it's about quantum local testability. So just in a few words, what does that mean? So basically what we want to find, ideally, is a local Hamiltonian with two properties. So we want a degenerate ground space, so we want a quantum code with like which can encode logical information. And the new property that we want is that we want somehow that the energy of an error scales linearly with the size of the error. Okay. So for instance, the toric code doesn't do that. So the toric code, you have like string-like excitations errors with weight like square root of n and energy just constant two. Okay, so we want something different from that. So that will be the goal at the end of the talk. But before that, I want to say a few things. So, so mostly when people work on quantum error correction, what they really want to do, and so I think it's a valid goal, is to kind of build a quantum computer, a large quantum computer. And for that, so we have like some features that we want from our quantum codes. So ideally, we want LDPC codes, so low density parity check codes. So we want the generators of the stabilizer group to act in a small number of qubits. Ideally, we want spatial or geometrical locality. So we want like qubits on a 2D or 3D lattice. So we saw this morning that this is not completely mandatory. So maybe with photonics approaches to quantum computing, we can get away without this. That would be nice. And of course, the main contenders today, they are like the surface code or like 3D variants of that. And this works quite well. So the topological codes in small dimensions, they have like good performance. They have efficient decoders. They have high threshold. The overhead is still quite large for fault tolerance, but the numbers are improving. So is this it? I mean, is this enough? Is this enough to do like 2D or 3D topological codes and we are done with it? And I hope it's not the case. I hope that we need something more because it would be a bit frustrating. Because if you, so from a physics point of view, it's fine, but if you think really from a coding point of view, topological codes in 2D or 3D are kind of boring. They're not that good. If you look at the toric code in 2D, if you have n physical qubits, you can encode like a constant number of logical qubits, and the median distance is square root of n. So these are not so good parameters. And actually, these are kind of the best that you can hope for in 2D Euclidean manifolds. So there's this Bravi-Poole integral bound that tells you that if you multiply the number of logical qubits by the minimal distance squared, you get something which is like at most n. Okay, whereas like what we could hope for is like n cubed. We could hope that we get good codes like k scales linearly with n, and so does the minimum distance. So with topological 2D or 3D codes, we are very far from that. Now if you work on like, you forget about Euclidean manifolds and you allow yourself to work on hyperbolic space, then you can get a little bit better. You can get this log square here, but still it's not so good. Now if you move to 4D hyperbolic space, things get much better. So there's this nice paper by Gut and Lebowski 5 years ago, where they show that you can have like a constant rate, so k scales linearly with n, and you can have like polynomial minimum distance. So the minimum distance, we don't know exactly what it is, but it's like n to some constant, and the constant is between 0.2 and 0.3. Okay, so kind of the question that I want to ask is, what can we get if we forget about like 2D or 3D locality? Okay, so if we forget about geometric locality, what can we hope for? So we still want an LDPC construction. We still want the generators to have low weight, but we allow for non-local generators. Okay, I think it's a very nice mathematical topic with a lot of frustrating open questions. So maybe before looking at the quantum case, just a few words to say that in the classical case, things are well understood. So if you look at classical LDPC codes, So what is that? It's just like the kernel of a parity check matrix. And you want the parity check matrix to be sparse to get this LDPC condition. And turns out that if you just pick like such a parity check matrix at random, with good probability, we'll get a good code. So like a code with like a constant rate and linear minimum distance. So you get good codes, and in addition, you get efficient decoding for that. Okay, for instance, with belief propagation, you get everything. So you get good codes, good decoding. So that's the classical situation. In the quantum case, we're not there yet. So what is a quantum LDPC code? So we look at just at stabilizer codes. So you have a stabilizer group generated by some generators that commute. And the LDPC condition just says that each of these generators, it has support on a small number of qubits, so either constant or logarithmic. And you also want that for every qubit, it's only involved in a finite small number of generators. Okay, and then the quantum code is just the space of states which are stabilized by all these generators. Okay. I think the big questions that interest me, but I think they're very nice questions, is so what kind of parameters can we achieve for this kind of conditions, so for quantum LDPC codes? Okay, what kind of parameters can we achieve? So in terms of rate and minimum distance. Can we get efficient decoding? So it's quite open. And what are the links with Hamiltonian complexity? Because when you talk about a quantum code like this, it's kind of easy to see it as a ground space of a local Hamiltonian. So what can we say about this kind of local Hamiltonians? Okay, so these are the questions that I'm interested in. So I won't solve them today. That's kind of what I would like to do like in the next few years. I want to look at this. Okay, so first thing I want to kind of review is what kind of minimum distance we can get with the current constructions of quantum LDPC codes. Turns out that beating the square root n bound of the toric code is very hard. So the toric code is kind of very simple, and it gives like a large minimum distance, which is square root n. So it's not n, but it's square root n. And beating the square root n has turned out to be very, very challenging. So there's a construction by Friedman, Meyer, and Luo from a long time ago that kind of complicated. It's based on differential geometry, topology. And they can slightly beat the square root n by like log n to the 1/4. Actually, there's a typo in the paper. So in the paper, they say square root n log square root log n. It turns out that they just made a small mistake at the end when they get the corollary to get the distance, and you get this thing wrong. So that's the only part of the paper that I could understand. So I could just check that and okay. But, okay, so it's kind of complicated construction to get this this small improvement. And then much more recently, so 3 years ago, Kaufman, Kazan, and Lubotsky, they use completely different approach. So they study different things. So they study like high dimensional expanders, generalization of like expander graphs, but like to complexes. And so they have a construction of like what is called a Ramanujan complex. So they don't talk about quantum codes, but if you take their construction, it gives you a CSS code where you have two distances, one for x errors and one for z errors, and they are different. So one is like linear in n, and the other one is log n. And then if you use a kind of a balancing techniques by Hastings, a couple of years ago, you can somehow somehow adjust this so that the two minimum distances they match. In this way, you get a code, an LDPC code with minimum distance square root n, square root of log n. Okay, and that's the best we know of today.
Anthony, yeah. These constructions come at the cost of k.
Sorry?
Do these constructions come at the cost of k, so you lose cost of
k? So good question. So I'm not sure. This one clearly is a constant k, and this one I would think so as well. I'm not sure. Not sure for the second one.
So both of these things, exceeding square root n, does not have may not happen with increasing cases.
No, yeah, we don't know, yeah. And there was a paper also by Hastings 2 years ago where I gave a different kind of construction, but he couldn't find out the minimum distance of that construction in conjectures that this could be like n to the power of 1 minus epsilon for any epsilon positive, but just a conjecture, and I don't think, it's like a very wild conjecture, we'll say. And now if you want quantum LDPC codes that have a good minimum distance and also like a good rate, so one kind of magic tool that you can use has been invented by Teach and Zemmour like 10 years ago. It's called the hypergraph product code. It's kind of a general construction that takes two classical codes and gives you a CSS code. And if you apply this construction to two good classical LDPC codes, so codes with constant rate and linear minimum distance, then you end up with a quantum code with constant rate and minimum distance, which is square root of n. And this kind of thing is like it's a generalization of the toric code. So you can, for instance, you can recover the toric code with this construction if you take the product of two repetition codes. And then there's a kind of a generalization of this, which has been introduced by Bravi and Hastings. And it's called homological product codes. And these tell you that you can find codes with good minimum distance, linear minimum distance, if you relax the LDPC condition. You don't want like constant weight generators anymore, or log weight, but you allow yourself to get square root n local generators.
In some sense, polar codes do that also.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, they do? Okay.
The typical weight of stabilizers.
Okay.
We don't have a threshold.
Sorry?
Those codes in the Bravi Hastings paper, they have a threshold.
I don't know. I have no clue. Okay, so that was for like code constructions with good minimum distance. Now I want to say a few words about decoding quantum LDPC codes. So if you just restrict yourself to topological codes in small dimension, then this is essentially solved. There are many nice decoding algorithms to do that. But I'm more interested in like in general case where you have like an LDPC code with no like topological structure. Then there are like two main approaches. So there's belief propagation, but then so this is kind of the thing that you would like to do. You would like to do belief propagation because it works so well in the classical case. But there you have a lot of issues when you go to the quantum case. So if you try to look at LDPC codes, you will end up with a lot of small cycles in your kind of Tanner graph. And this is not good for the BP algorithm. Also, you have like many symmetric patterns that will occur. And some of the decoder, it will somehow get stuck. It doesn't know how to choose between different symmetric patterns. It's not clear at all how to deal with degeneracy. Okay, so this would be like a very worthy goal to try to do belief propagation for quantum LDPC codes, but kind of hard. One thing that has worked not so badly in the last few years is greedy decoding in local balls. So this was introduced first by Hastings for the 4D hyperbolic codes. And then we kind of gave another example of that for quantum expander codes. And we have an algorithm that's called small set flip. I will talk about it. So what's small set flip and what are quantum expander codes? So first, classical expander codes. So these were invented by Sipser and Spielmann like in 96. So these are codes such that the factor graph of the code is an expander code, is an expander graph. Okay, so expander graph means that basically the neighborhood of any small region is almost as large as it can be, it expands. And if you take the hypergraph product code of two of these classical expander codes, you end up with a quantum code, which is called the quantum expander codes, which has these parameters. And this kind of code, it comes with a very simple decoding algorithm, which is inspired by the bit flip algorithm that works for the classical case. So in the classical case, what you would do to decode the classical expander code, you would just pick one bit and try to flip it. And if you, when you flip it, you decrease the weight of the syndrome, then you flip it. If you don't decrease the weight of the syndrome, then you move on to the next bit. And you just do that until it doesn't work anymore, and turns out that this works well. In the quantum case, you have to be a bit more subtle than that. And the way the small set flip decoding algorithm works is that you take every generator now, not just every qubit, but every generator, and then what you do is you consider all patterns of errors within a generator, and you try to, and you apply one, or the one that decreases the syndrome weight the most. And because you're working with LDPC codes, the syndrome weights, sorry, the generator's weights are just constant. And so all the patterns of errors, it's just a constant number of patterns that you have to check. So it's kind of efficient. And you just repeat that until you're stuck. And what we could show is that for a quantum expander cause, if you start with an error weight of less than square root of n, then you will correct it always. There's a nice property that this kind of decoder is local in the sense that if you have like, if your errors are like in different clusters in the Tanner graph, then the different clusters will be decoded independently. So that's quite nice because this allows you to prove that this kind of decoding algorithm gives you a constant threshold for local stochastic errors on both qubits and measurement syndromes. Okay, so. So this we can prove like analytically, but the bounds that we get are very bad. But in practice, we can do numerics, and we just take like a product of two random LDPC codes. And this kind of decoder works well. So for the phenomenological noise model, you get a threshold about 6 or 7% in the noiseless syndrome case. And you have, if you have noisy syndromes, then you still have like a threshold around 3%, which is okay. So if you want to analyze this kind of decoding algorithm, so small set flip, or even the bit flip decoder for the classical case, the analysis will rely on some property of the code. And the properties that you need is that the code has some, displays some soundness. Okay, so what does that mean? It means that for any error of weight not too large, the syndrome weight associated with the error grows linearly with the error weight. So the error weight is just the distance from the your world to the code. Okay? And this is a kind of a nice property. And if this is true for any error, so without this kind of restriction, then you say that your code is locally testable. It's kind of nice. So in classical setting, it's a property that you can get in many constructions, and it's a nice property. For instance, it allows you to distinguish between code words and code words far from the code, but just making a few queries to bits in a classical case or qubits in a quantum case. You can easily distinguish between these two cases. So in the classical settings, there are many applications, so mostly in theoretical computer science. So for instance, when you want to prove the PCP theorem. And in the quantum case, it's not so clear what are the applications. So in the quantum case, so this quantum locally testable codes, they have been introduced by Aronoff and Eldar in 2015. So as I was saying, the applications, they remain a bit unclear at the moment. So it's mostly in Hamiltonian complexity. For instance, for this, there's a conjecture in Hamiltonian complexity, which is called the NLTS conjecture. It tells you, so the conjecture is that there exists families of local Hamiltonians such that any state below, like with energy below some constant fraction of the maximal energy that you can get, is hard to prepare. So you cannot prepare it starting with a product state with a like constant depth circuit. Okay, so this conjecture really says that they are like Hamiltonians for which all the low energy states are very entangled and hard to prepare. And turns out that if you could find quantum local testable codes with linear minimum distance, so that's kind of a lot to ask for, then this would establish this conjecture. More recently, there was a paper by Eldar, like last month, that managed to prove an average case version of this conjecture based on the quantum locally testable code that I will talk about. Also, like in a relation with Stephen's talk yesterday, I mean, kind of this locality stability is like a very strong form of confinement of errors. Okay, so if you want the error to grow, then the energy will have to grow proportional to the error weight. So that's as much as you can ask for. And there are also links with single-shot decoding. So there's Earl has a paper about that last year. It's not so clear yet what are the exact relations between single-shot decoding and local testability. But, there are some links. So if you want to really properly define what is quantum locally testable code, you kind of have to quantize the notions of distance to your code and the weight of the syndrome. So, weight of the syndrome, the idea is to replace that by the energy of your state. So basically, when you have a quantum code, ellipsic code, you can form a Hamiltonian, which is just up to some like constant it's just minus of the sum of the generators. Okay. And then you want to kind of define a distance operator. So what you do is you say that you will define these subspaces. So C naught will be just the code space. And then you say that C sub T is basically all the words, all the states which are at distance T from your code space. And then you can define this kind of distance operator. So it gives you, so it's an Hermitian operator that gives you value T if you are at distance T from your code. And with these notions of Hamiltonian and distance operator, you can define what is a quantum locally testable code with someness eta. So it's just a code such that the Hamiltonian is larger than this distance operator by some factor eta over n. And so far, there are only two known constructions, I think, for codes with this kind of properties. So one was in a paper by Hastings 2 years ago. So Hastings is referenced many times in this talk. He has on everything. So you could find like a locally testable code, so which encodes two logical qubits. And in this work, we improve a little bit the constant, but it's not so significant. But so we decrease the number of qubits, we have only one. But kind of the nice part is that we give like a construction that would allow to have like a growing number of qubits, of logical qubits. We cannot prove that it's locally testable yet, but we kind of conjecture that it is. So examples of codes which are not locally testable. So as I mentioned at the beginning, the toric code is not.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Can you go back? I was parsing your definition.
Yeah.
Are these pi subspaces orthogonal? They're not.
Yeah. So no. So pi c t is within the next one. No. So they are included one in.
Okay.
So that's why you cannot do this difference here. So you want to say that you are at distance t if you're in pi ct, but not in pi ct minus 1.
But why
aren't
they included?
Because so the definition here is that
yes.
So c sub t is just a span of all the states which are at distance at most t from your code space.
Oh,
so you,
of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was capital N?
sorry, so capital N is just the number of qubits.
Oh, okay.
So it's just the renormalization to get, So this is renormalized, so you divide by Q is just a kind of the locality, and M is the number of generators, so this is
Okay.
The spectrum of this is between 0 and 1 over Q.
And this is just trying to understand that last line of the blue box. So what does the inequality sign mean?
So it just means that if you take the difference, it's positive semi-definite.
Okay, is that okay? I just was wondering because it's like a curly inequality.
Yeah. But okay, but I mean, it doesn't really matter. So the point really is that the energy is greater than the distance to the code somehow, times some constant. Yeah, so some examples of codes which are not locally testable. So toy code, basically in any dimension, is not locally testable. Even the quantum expander codes that I was mentioning before, they are not locally testable because they are like errors of large weight with constant energy. Okay, so now I come to the construction quickly. The paper has been it took a long time to finish the paper. So it appeared like at QIP last year. So yeah, just a summary of what. So we get like different families of codes. So in the simplest version, we have only one logical qubit. So the codes are almost LDPC. They are log local. So the generators have log weight. The parameters are like this. So this is basically like the toy code. It's like you have one logical qubit and a minimum distance that is essentially like square root n. So it's locally testable with this parameter. And we kind of wonder whether, so it doesn't seem to matter much. So we lose a log factor. And this is why the paper took so long to appear, because it's really bothering that we lose this log factor. Because, okay, so it doesn't seem so important. But it is very important when you go to the general case, because so in the one qubit case, you just lose the log factor. But for the same reason, in the general case, we lose like a factorial factor, which kills us if we want to talk about local testability. And one nice property is because of the local testability, we get an efficient decoder for adversarial errors of weight, just the minimum distance over polylog n. And in the general case, we get codes with like a polynomial number of logical qubits, polynomial dimension. And here we cannot prove local testability yet. So it's just conjectured. So what is the code construction? So the construction is really due to Vivian. So he's my PhD student.
Can you go back?
Yeah.
The distance is only square root of n. So
yes.
Wouldn't that mean that there are errors of weight square root of n that?
Yeah, so when I say errors, the weight of the errors is not really the weight of the error is a distance to the code. So many.
Right. Okay. So you look at the coset that contains that error.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess like if you're trying to construct a code that has a large energy barrier, you're asking how the energy barrier scales with the size of the code. If it's making it locally testable, I imagine the hope is that you're trying to get an energy barrier that's going to scale like linearly with the size of the code. But
yes.
If the distance is square root n, that's not going to happen.
Yes. So the distance is square root n, but you can still have words which are like at distance n from the code. No? So you can have like the distance, it just means that there are two code words which are close to each other, but you could still have like an error which is far away from these two code words somehow.
But there will still be like a path of errors that takes like the shortest path to create a logical error.
But we don't care about logical errors here. So in local testability, we don't care about logical errors. You don't just want to kind of be able to discriminate whether you're close to the code space, or far from it.
Yeah, so I'm already trying to like translate into what the application is in terms of.
Yeah.
We come back to it at the end.
Okay. So yeah, was saying that kind of the project started because Vivian wanted to find codes with large minimum distance. We didn't really care about local testability at that point. And kind of the intuition is that, okay, so if you look at like topological codes, small dimensions, say, for surfaces, so there are like geometric interpretations for n, the number of qubits, and the minimum distance. So the number of qubits is basically the area of the surface, and the minimum distance is the systole of the surface, so the length of the shortest loop which is not contractible, which is not a boundary of a 2D region. So kind of the idea was to, okay, let's fix D and try to minimize the size of the code. And then one kind of idea that you can have is to try to work with surfaces with positive curvature, because it seems to be better to get small n and large d. So for instance, the sphere. So if you just take the sphere, you have no logical qubit, so you need to do some identification to get a logical qubit. And kind of the simplest way to do that is to take the projective plane, so you just identify points which are like antipodal from one another on a sphere. And if you do that, you get one logical qubit. You can compute the system of this thing, it's pi. You can compute the area, it's 2 pi. So you can hope that somehow the system is larger than the square root of the size. But it doesn't work so well, because you just get one code, so you don't get an infinite family of quantum codes. And the way you can do that somehow is by increasing the dimension, okay? Going from dimension 2 to 3 and to like large dimension. And this is kind of the idea of our code construction. So like in 3D, what does it give you? So we take a discrete version of the sphere. So we take like just the Hamming cube. And what we do is that we identify pairs of points or vertices or like edges which are antipodal. Okay, so this vertex is identified with this one is that one. So in 3D case, what you get, so you put the qubits on the edges, so you get 6 qubits. So the minimum distance for the X-type errors, in fact, it's 3, so it's the size of the minimal non-trivial cycle, so it's basically this 3. The minimum distance, it's very weird, for Z is the smallest size of non-trivial co-cycle, so it's 2. And what is kind of nice is that if you take the product, you get exactly, so dx times dz, you get exactly n. So that's for dimension 3, but then you can generalize this to any dimension. So now you, really the code construction is this. So you take the n cube, you work in dimension n. And just as before, you identify vertices or faces which are like antipodal from one another. Now we have to make a choice for where we put the qubits. So we put the qubits on the p faces. So p is just an integer between 1 and n minus 1. And the generators, they are on the p plus 1 or p minus 1 faces. Okay, so it's just like the toric code, but with this kind of different identification. So we identify antipodal faces. And if you do that, you get one logical qubit. You get this number of physical qubits. So basically, n choose p is just the number of like directions that you can have for a p face. And then this number is just the number of different values that you can get for the other coordinates. And for this, you can work out everything. So you can work out the minimum distance. So you have two different minimum distances for x errors and z errors. And just in the 3D case, if you take the product of these two distances, you get n. And if you choose p with the right value, you get dx equals dz equals square root of n. So it's kind of a nice construction. It turns out that this construction or this code had appeared already in the literature, but in a completely different context. In a paper by Benjamin Odu, like 6 years ago, and it's using Kovanov homology. So it was really impossible to see that it was the same code, but I mean, because they have the same parameters, and then we started to wonder whether they were the same or not. And it turns out that they're the same. Okay, so now the interesting part is that you can prove local testability for this code. So what does that mean? So we kind of want to relate the weight of a syndrome to the weight of the error, or like the distance between an error, a set, a word, and a code space. And actually, there's a geometric interpretation for this. Because this is a homological code in high dimension, but still a homological code. The weight of the syndrome is just the weight of a boundary. And the distance between the error and the code is just a minimal weight of a filling of that boundary. So basically, when you see the syndrome, you see a boundary in your n cube. And what you want to find is like a filling of that boundary. You want to find like a surface, like a p-dimensional surface that gives you that boundary. So what we are looking for is it's called filling inequalities. So we want to show that if you're given like a boundary, you can find a small filling corresponding to that boundary. It turns out that kind of the same question was addressed by the paper by Dotterer in 2012 in the case of the n cube. So it's not the same as our code. So in our code, we have this identification between antipodal faces. But in the standard cube, you can ask the same question. You can start with a boundary, like this one. And you can ask, what is the small filling of that boundary? And Dotterer, he gave an algorithm to kind of find a small filling. And the idea is to somehow send the syndrome to the left, and you just fill what you get. These faces, you put these faces in your filling. And you just iterate this thing. So yeah, so this is maybe. Yeah. So you can iterate this. And in that way, you can find a filling of your boundary. And if you choose the order of the directions in which you kind of project in a careful manner, then you can somehow bound the size of your filling. The proof is not so complicated. I won't show it because it's, you kind of need to be used to the notations, but it's not complicated. And in the case of the n cube, what Dotterer could find is could prove that the boundary has size at least a constant times the size of filling. So in the code language, it means that the syndrome weight is at least a constant times the distance to the code. But of course, if you do that in the n cube without identification, you get no homology, so you get zero logical qubit. Okay? But it turns out that kind of the same strategy, so you need to adapt it a little bit, but it still works when you take the quotient of the cube by this identification. But as I was mentioning at the beginning, when we do that with our current analysis, we lose a log factor and compared to Dotterer, and it's kind of annoying. Okay, so just the last few minutes, I just want to say how to generalize this code. So another way to kind of see the code that I just described, to say, okay, so you can label all the vertices in your cube by like strings of length n. You can label like edges by strings of length n, but with like stars that tells you in which direction you're moving. And the identification that I was mentioning, antipodal faces, basically you just means that you identify faces when they differ by like the word 1111111. Okay, so basically what you do is you identify faces when they differ or when they belong to the same coset of the repetition code. Okay. And once you have this kind of view of this point of view, it's kind of natural to ask what happens if now you take the quotient of the n cube, but not by the repetition code, but by arbitrary linear codes. Okay, so you take an arbitrary linear code of length n. You still put the faces on some like p faces of dimension p, and now you want to identify the faces if they differ by an element of this code. Okay, so you will identify the p face x and y if x plus y belongs to your classical code. Turns out that when you do that, you get many more logical qubits, And you can compute everything. So we could we managed to compute the number of qubits, dimension. We managed to compute the minimum distance. And it's kind of surprising that these two things, the dimension and the minimum distance, they only depend on the parameters of the classical code of k on k and d. They don't depend on the parity check matrix that you give to describe. They don't depend on any like structure of your code beyond key k and d. Okay, so that's kind of the general construction. Let me conclude. So what we introduce is kind of like a family of quantum codes. So in the simplest version, you have just take the n cube and you identify antipodal faces. You get one logical qubit, you get minimum distance with this square root n, and you get something which is locally testable. And in the general version, you identify faces if they belong to the same coset of a given linear code, classical linear code. And we could work out the explicit dimension and minimum distance. And for this, we kind of conjecture that it could be locally testable, but couldn't prove that. And we say that one main open question is try to prove that they are locally testable, these things. And what we would like to understand is kind of what kind of parameters we can get. So in a classical case, people, they get really close to getting like locally testable codes with like constant rate, a linear minimum distance, and almost constant soundness. They cannot get this. It's conjecture that you cannot get this racing at the same time. But in a quantum case, it's really completely open. So at the moment, we just have like two examples of quantum LTC codes, locally testable codes, and they just get one or two logical qubits. So we don't even know whether we can get local testability with a growing number of qubits. Okay.
So you mentioned there was an efficient algorithm for this filling.
Yes.
So I presume you did some numerical test to.
Yeah, that works so well.
Sorry,
for the what?
To check your conjecture.
Does
the problem still become a filling problem for these generalization?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you could.
But not so easily, because these things, they become huge very quickly, and so you cannot. Even in the simplest case where you just identify like for the repetition code. So really to the interesting behaviors, they start to occur when n is large enough. And we cannot test that. It's just too big.
So, okay, so it's efficient, but not
yeah.
Crazy.
Exactly. No. Yeah.
Is there like an example of the quantum expander code familiar to us?
An example of the quantum expander code?
Is there a simplest example? Like, I guess the reason I ask is because, like, let's say I cared about like the set of transversal gates.
Yes.
You know, questions about that in these codes. Like, where would I look to answer those questions? Like, is that known for certain toy examples, or it's just unknown?
Yeah. So for this, I'm not the best one, but Annie or David, maybe you can comment. So you have a paper about this.
Even have the whole configured domain. That's what I was wondering. So none of the hyperbaric products. No. But they're kind of generalization of the toric code. The toric code doesn't have a transversal S, so they all lack transversal S.
Mm.
Can I ask just maybe a broader question about that for any of these code constructions with non-zero weight?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like what would be an approach to looking for doing fault-tolerant gates, or is that even been investigated by anyone? If you said, I'm not just interested in code properties, but I want to be able to do fault-tolerant gates on all of
mm-hmm.
these.
So these guys have a paper about this, but I don't.
Code deformation is a possibility. And you had a scheme also to that work.
Yeah, so the standard approaches that work for any stabilizer code. But David and Ani had a paper on expander code, specifically alternative schemes for doing some things.
Can I go back to ask a question about
yeah.
testability? So,
yes.
Am I remembering correctly that you said that the stabilizer, the checks had weight log n?
Yes.
So, are there any examples of locally testable codes that have strictly constant weight?
No, not yet. No, no. So, in our construction and Hastings, it's the same.
Possible.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. In the classical case, it's possible, but so you have two ways. So you have like so in the classical case, so what you really want to you want the generators to have like a small weight, but you don't care so much if a bit belongs to many generators. So
okay.
You want to allow that. You want to allow like a large redundancy. But yeah, so in the quantum case, we don't know. We don't know what's possible or not.
Okay. Unless there are any more questions, let's thank Hans again.